not to put you on the spot or anything like that, but I'm not sure if you're aware that there's going to be a roast for Jamie McLennan on September 7th. And we are interested in having you as one of the roasters. Would that interest you?
Okay, so wait a sec. It's September 7th now?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they need a little bit more time. It was going to be in May, but they changed it.
You would think that one of the organizers who had asked me previously and gave me a different date might have wanted to update me on the new date as I'm trying to move the Earth, the Moon, and the stars to try to be there for Jamie, but I guess he dropped the ball.
Oh, well, you know what? Now you can rip on him even more for that. Oh, so no,
he might be sitting right here. Yeah. He might be sitting in this chair right here. Well, it's just recent, Craig. You know, I'm trying to get it figured out what was going on.
Nice. Well, that's all good. Well, you try to look at your because you're in the playoffs, so it's a lot harder. So this way, you'll be coming off with 2 months of golfing, so you'll probably be ready to go.
Okay. So here's the deal. Okay, I'm in 100%.
Oh, this is awesome. And, oh, by the way, Stratty's the Toastmaster, so feel free to rip him too. So that'll be a pretty tough
target. Yeah, but the problem is, here's what I've learned about Toastmasters is that they're going to have the microphone a lot more than I am. So I'll have it once, and he'll have it multiple times. So you better be very careful about how you want to attack, because they not only can attack once, they can attack multiple times. I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid.
Well, I can tell you that having done this before, Craig, it makes it more fun, because when we did that, we roasted Struds last year, and I was lucky enough to be the roast master, and I took a few darts as well, but it's loads of fun. So I look forward to it. I think we have yourself, and we have a few other people. We'll announce the full roster, but I think the audience is very much going to like it, because the great part about this roast is as much as we roast noodles, everybody else takes a few bullets every now and then too. So it's loads of fun.
You count me in.
Oh,
perfect. It's a big check mark, 100%. You got me.
Okay, I love it. Now, The NHL playoffs round two is on. I haven't got your thoughts yet, because it just, you know, since last Friday. But can you kind of, when you watched what unfolded in Game 7 of San Jose and Vegas, from the bad call until what happened and then into overtime, what was your whole thoughts on that scenario?
Okay, so I was watching the game, and you know, you're sitting there and you're thinking, okay, call it 2 minutes for cross-checking. Okay, and even that, I struggled with it, because it looked like more of a shove. But okay, I can accept it. I thought right away, five-minute major? Really? And that. Okay, so that's okay. But, like, you know, there's penalties that are called in the course of a game that happen, and you go, really? Really? That's really going to be a penalty? But, and Jason, you know this, and you know, I sent you a note the other day. Just because you had a call go against you, does that mean you can just abdicate your penalty killing? Like, yeah. I mean, it was awful. I mean, so the Vegas Golden Knights, I get it. You know what? And Jason Stradlich, you know, you've dealt with adversity at different times. You go, okay, we got to kill this one, and we got to make sure we do this. I mean, 4 power play goals in 4 minutes and 1 second? Really? And now you're going to talk about, you know, the situation and say, oh, boy, that was – okay, was it a turning point? Yeah, I get it. There's turning points in every game. There's turning points in every series. But how you deal with those potential turning points is up to you. I would suggest that the Vegas Golden Knights fully capsized. So is that on the referee? I don't know. When you capsize like they did, I'd say that's you better take a good, long, hard look in the mirror.
Yeah, it was really interesting, because that's really the first time, and I'm not going to say I've watched every single Vegas game for the last 2 years, but that's the first time I've really seen them come unglued, because I totally disagree with the penalty. I thought it was an awful call, but they still have the ability and the right to stop. Like, you've got to get a handle on it. So I don't know if it's a timeout. I don't know if it's someone grabbing the bull by the horns of a player. Something's got to happen. Or someone fake an injury just to break the momentum up. It was just like they accepted their fate. Oh, they're going to score. They're going to score. Then, I mean, they did get back into it, but it was a massive turning point in that series and game.
Well, it was. And Jason, you make a great point about it too, right? Like, you know, about the Vegas Golden Knights over a span of two seasons, you know, you've never seen them do that. And they fall behind or they get challenged and boom, they rise right up. And, you know, again, and Jason, I'll ask you this question. And I think I know the answer, but how many times in the course of a game in your career, whether it be in Kamloops or whether the NHL, where you said, we're killing this penalty. We know it's BS, but we're killing it. And you dug in and you said, no darn way are they going to get rewarded on this penalty. And to your point, Vegas just kind of said, okay, well, we got a bad call against us. That's no reason to give up 4 and 4-1.
No, and that's exactly it. There's got to be a, I don't know if the right word is determination, but just like saying, guys, you know what? Yeah, it screwed us, but let's just get this done. And yeah, you give up one goal, maybe you give up two goals, but I was really surprised by how they came unglued. And I don't know what the conversation was on the bench between the coaching staff. And maybe you couldn't because it's so loud. You know, that Shark Tank is tough, but there's got to be something said or written down or something. Like, call the timeout, just give them some breathing space. And I'm really disappointed. Now they're on the outside looking in. And Craig, when you look at this series now that's moving forward, I want to talk about this Sharks Colorado series. I'm on record as suggesting that the speed of Colorado might pose an issue for the Sharks. How do you see this evolving in the second round matchup of, you know, what could be, you know, maybe one or two unlikely guys?
Well, you know, one of the things I will say, I totally agree with you about Colorado and their speed, and they really maxed it out against the Calgary Flames, and when Calgary looked like they didn't have an answer for it, or didn't look like it, they didn't. One thing I really like about San Jose is their five defensemen. You know, Burns, Carlson, Vlasic, Justin Braun, and Brendan Dillon. I think that's a great, group of defensemen. I think they have enough firepower up front. I think if Martin Jones, and you know what, early in that series against Vegas, you know, he and during the course of the season, he was subpar. I mean, I think in the three key goaltending categories, it was 54 qualified starters or 54 qualified goaltenders. And I don't have exactly what the categories were, but I do know this. Martin Jones was 50th, 52nd, and 54th. Mm-hmm. That tells you how bad the goaltending was. And it wasn't great in the first few games, in the first four games of that series. All of a sudden, he finds his way. Even the third goal in game seven, you're going, oh, geez, Martin Jones, you can't give that one up. But he did. If he can just keep his head above water, I think San Jose, because of those five defensemen, because of the group they have up front, that they can get on the other side of it. But if they're chasing the game against a team that has great speed and a great competitive spirit in Colorado, I think it's going to be tough for them. And, you know, when you look at what McKinnon, and led by McKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog, you know, really being great contributors along with McKinnon, Calgary couldn't stop those three. And if Martin Jones is going to be a goaltender that's going to let in goals that, you know, you need to stop, I think San Jose will be in tough. So, really, I'm putting it right on the goaltender's shoulders here. Just I'm not telling you it has to be great, but you better not force your team to chase the game.
Greg Button from TSN joins us. Craig, having been running the draft for so long now, of course, doing all of your scouting work for TSN, I was looking at the last few years in the draft class, and last year, of course, was the 2000 draft class, and I looked at over 57% of the kids drafted were born in 1999 or 1998, not even in 2000. And this year, and that's been a kind of almost a trend for a while. So when you're starting to see that way, has there ever been conversations why they wouldn't move it up a year and just keep open for kids who are those 18 years of age, you know, or 17 if we want to call it that, the five, and if you're taken in the top five, no problem. Why is there such an unwillingness to want to look at that when you're seeing more and more players drafted who aren't, you know, are in their second or third time draft eligible?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of different layers to this, Jason, and it has been discussed, and it's been discussed on a lot of different levels. One of them is the one you talked about, in terms of, like, you know, where are players coming in to junior hockey? Where are they at 16? I mean, rarely are 16-year-old players able to really get a real significant part on the team. I mean, the best players do, but most of them don't. And then their 17 year, they go through the different challenges. You know, some of them are a little bit further ahead, some of them aren't. Some of them are a little bit further advanced physically. The one area that I really like and probably in terms of, you know, full disclosure, like, you know, I never really bought into it about the 19-year-old draft, is that there's a trickle-down effect. So if you now, if the junior teams and teams now can have players to 19, you know what? You don't have to force players in at 16. And now that trickles down to, now you don't have to have players at 15 playing up. They can play in their own level. 16-year-old players might be able to go back. Look at Braden Tracy. Braden Tracy is a player. He's playing for Team Canada at the U18 tournament. He had a really good rookie year with Moose Jaw. But his rookie year was this year. It wasn't last year after he was a first-round draft pick. He went back to midget hockey. He kept his offensive confidence. He allowed himself to mature both physically, emotionally, and not both, but in all three areas, physically, mentally, and emotionally. So now he was ready to come into the Western Hockey League with a lot better chance of, you know, prospering. And I think that's really important. And not getting players pushed along too quickly. You know, what you look at players, you know, that are going to play in the NHL, the vast majority of them are going to find their way at 21, 22. Now, we know that there's exceptions because there's some really top-end players, but that's where they're going to find their level. And I think that we have to find a way, to your point, of allowing that process to take place. And by extension, you know what, you're not going to push players ahead at 15 or 16, maybe not even at 17. And more importantly, the players aren't going to feel like they're going to have to be in a rush to get somewhere and understand that, hey, listen, this is a process and there's your steps. So I'm on board. I was never a big supporter of the 19-year-old draft. I'm on board now.
We're talking with Craig Button from NHL on TSN, all things hockey related. Switching back to the NHL, you look at some of the time off that these teams had. We saw Columbus last night, and now, you know, tonight we got the Islanders going off. Does it affect teams differently? Like, you look at the Islanders and how much success they had over the course of the season into this year, into the playoffs. Does it make a difference for them that they have that and they're feeling good about themselves, or would it have been better to keep playing?
You know, Jason, and you've been through this. I think you get to a point in the season where you just want to play, and when you're winning, you can't wait for the next game. So the Islanders have been off for a week. You know, the Columbus Blue Jackets were off for a week, right? And you know, like you ramp up for the first round of the playoffs, and you know what the challenges are going to be. You get on the other side of them, and you're successful. And now you're going, okay, we're not playing tomorrow, or we're not playing in 3 days, and who are we playing? And, you know, all this, and John Tortorella ran the scrimmage, and coaches run practices. But you get into a rhythm, and you start to go, okay, game, day off, game, day off, game, day off. And it's just like, let's get going here, and let's just start. It's like when you're running, and you might be running 10 miles. And you start off in the first mile, then the second mile. By the fourth mile, you're going, I could run all day. And I think the playoffs are a lot like that. That doesn't mean that you don't have different challenges. But I do think that there's a benefit to continue playing. And I think that there is at times, you know, where you've been ramped up, and then all of a sudden there's a stop and a halt. And then you have to get ramped up again. Some teams have been able to do it. The LA Kings in 2012 were a great example of that en route to the Stanley Cup. But a lot of teams, you know, struggled to get back up to that level. And, you know, a team coming off a 7-game series or a 6-game series that are in that rhythm, you know, I think that they do at times have a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, we'll see it again tonight, Carolina and the Islanders. I think the Islanders have the NHL record for the longest layoff from playing their last game of round one to the next one because they swept it, and then Carolina, of course, went 7, and then they had to wait the extra day. So, yeah, I'm curious to see how it plays out. One quick one for you, Craig, though. When you look at the Islanders, and they didn't luck their way into shutting down Pittsburgh, right? Like, they continued on with the strength of their team, which was defense and limiting teams. And that fourth line, I know a lot of people are like, oh, fourth line. Like, Sidney Crosby had 1 point in that series, and Casey Cizikas and that line did a great job of just controlling the puck. You look at that matchup, do you expect to see them on Aho a lot this series?
Well, one of the things is, and again, and you think about the playoffs and you think about teams that have had success. So, you know, even if you go back to last year and you think about, you know, the Washington Capitals, and you can go back even further than that. But, okay, so you got Matt Martin, Casey Zizekas, and Kyle Clutterbuck coming out, okay? Like, whoever's out against them, there's no rest. There's no sense of, like, okay, this shift might be a little bit easier. Because they're hard. They're hard on the puck. They're hard in their forecheck. They're tenacious, and they're not going away. So I don't care what player you are, whether you're the top pair defenseman or the third pair defenseman or you're the second line or the first line, there's no opportunity to get kind of that deep breath that says, okay, this shift will be hard, but it won't be as hard as the other ones. And that to me is, and we use the word depth a lot of times in the playoffs, but I think it's got to be really defined. And the depth of a Matt Martin and a Casey Zizekas and a Cal Clutterbuck becomes significant. Much like Washington last year with Chandler Stephenson and Jay Beagle and Devontae Smith-Pelly. And when you start to wear down teams and it becomes one line, second line, third line, fourth line, opponents sitting on the bench going, oh, I got to go out against Cal Clutterbuck again. I got to go out against Casey Zizekas. And it wears on you. And the playoffs so much are about trying to, first of all, dampen the spirit of your opponent and then ultimately break the spirit of your opponent. When you have a line like that, that's what you're trying to do. And I think the Islanders have a good chance to do the exact same thing against the Carolina Hurricanes. And I'm not betting against the Islanders maybe going all the way to the Stanley Cup final, because defensively they're good. And they have a real good depth of players, defensemen and forwards, that make life really difficult for opponents.
Craig, great stuff as always, man. Have yourself a great weekend. And Strutty, he's just going to send you a text. It's September 7th now, just so you know. September
7th. I'm in. I got it here. I already marked it, so we're good. I can't wait.
Well, he's not going to be answering my text for a while. Sorry, Craig. I owe you one.
We'll talk to you next Friday. Have a good weekend.
Oh, boy.
Thanks, yeah.